Hello and welcome to Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo. I'm Ryan Bickle. On today's show, we're talking with Jesse Lowry, our Director of Research and Conservation here at Blank Park Zoo. And Jesse was able to go to a conference a couple weeks ago called the ZAC Conference. And that's, well, she'll explain what that's all about in a moment. But we're excited to hear from her. And of course, if you haven't been to the zoo for a while, check out our website at blankparkzoo.com. That's blankparkzoo.com. We have lots of fun stuff on there. And of course, we always have lots of events, and you can come see the animals here at Blank Park Zoo. So without further ado, Jesse, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ryan. It's great to be back at the zoo after my travels to Jacksonville for the ZAC conference. And I'm excited to talk to you today about some of the things that I learned. Really, the ZAC conference is all about what Blank Park Zoo is about supporting field organizations. And as I always like to start out the show, that's a really important role of a modern zoo, is to help save animals in the wild. And so Blank Park Zoo's mission is to inspire an appreciation of the natural world through conservation, education, research, and recreation. And what we try to do is use the zoo as a tool to help incite behavior changes, to get people to care about the wildlife, to get people to care about wild spaces, to know what's at stake, and most importantly, what they can do in their own lives, whether they're a school or community or business or family, to help these amazing creatures survive in our rapidly changing world. And so, yeah, we actually had the ZAC conference here in Des Moines in 2013.
And when you say ZAC, that's ZACC, and that's zoos are committing to conservation. Did I get it right?
Zoos and aquariums committing to conservation.
Okay, I was close.
So ZAC has been in existence for about 20 years. My first ZAC conference was in 2011 at Woodland Park in Seattle. And I had been told this was an amazing conference, and I tried to go. It only happens every other year. And finally, in 2011, I was able to go. And I will tell you, Ryan, that is when Blank Park Zoo's conservation efforts kind of went to the next level. It's where we got to sit down with field researchers and other zoos, other accredited zoos from around the nation, and talk about what it means to be a modern zoo, what it means to use a zoo as a tool to save wild animals, and how is the best way to do it. What do the field researchers, the ones out on the front lines working to save these animals from extinction, what do they need from zoos? What can zoos do for them? And so those are some of the things that we talk about. And we've had the ZAC conference for about 20 years. And so after 2011, we met some of our field researchers that we support, like Eddie from Health and Harmony, which is an organization that works to educate local communities in Borneo around some national parks where there's lots of endangered orangutans and hornbills and such. We also met Lily Ajarova from the Chimpanzee Sanctuary and Wildlife Conservation Trust in Uganda. That's one of our big projects that we support here at the zoo, and immediately started working with these folks out on the front lines. We came back to the zoo and started really implementing all of these practices and things that we learned in Woodland Park in 2011. And it just so happens that the founder of ZAC saw all the hard work that we were doing and wanted to use Blank Park Zoo as a model for what small zoos can do to save animals in the wild. And we had the conference here in Des Moines in 2013. And Ryan, I'm sure that you can remember, it was several years ago, but it seems like just a couple years ago to me. It was amazing to have all of those conservation heroes in Des Moines.
Yeah, people still talk about the time they went to Des Moines, Iowa for the ZAC conference when I run into other professionals from other zoos, and hey, Blank Park, I remember going there. That was a great conference. And so it's always fun to talk with people from other zoos and other people that you work for the same goal and learn things from. And so, Jesse, tell us a little bit more.
So when we had the ZAC conference in 2013, we had folks from 18 different countries converge on Des Moines. And, you know, anybody in a profession where you get to go to a conference and learn about new things, you want to go to Florida. You want to go to the warm places. You want to go to San Francisco. So we kind of played off of that and gave people like the top 10 reasons to come to Zach in Des Moines. Uh-huh. And we talked about tractors and food on a stick at the Iowa State Fair and things that make Des Moines unique, and kind of played off of that a little bit. But it did go down in the history books as one of the best Zachs ever. And so we were really excited to have that experience here. And that helped, again, you know, give Blank Park Zoo the reputation that it has as being a very effective conservation organization working to save animals in the wild. So I luckily got a spot on the steering committee for the Zach conference and now help organize and get speakers for and sponsors for and find host zoos for each Zach conference. The next one, it happens every other year. It's not an every year thing, was in Denver in 2015. So that was a fantastic conference. And the one that I was just at was in Jacksonville. So we did get to go to a nice warm place in January. And we cap attendance at 300 people. Some folks might say, well, we want to get the message out to as many people as possible. Why would you do that? We really want to make sure that it's an intimate affair and that every single person at the conference gets to have time to talk to the people that they want to talk to. And again, it's about, I would say, 60% professionals from accredited zoos across the nation and world. We get a lot of folks coming over from the European zoos. And about 40% field researchers, those folks that are out there in the range countries working in very challenging situations, trying to figure out how we can save these animals. And the power of zoos is, for example, Blank Park Zoo, we have an audience of 500,000 people per year. We've got a staff of 50 or 60 folks who work here full time with diverse expertise and everything from graphic design to writing articles to veterinary care to rhino husbandry. And we've got a lot of support that we can give those field researchers and those organizations out in the range countries, besides just financial support. That's really the big obvious one that zoos can do to support organizations. And so at this past Zach conference, we had sessions on everything from creative fundraisers that zoos can do to help support the wild. We had a panel of field researchers get up in front of the room and talk about what exactly they need from zoos. So they need GPS units, they need digital cameras, they need really good binoculars, and they need someone to run their websites. They need folks to look over grant applications for them. Some of these folks, English is their second language, and they, you know, just need things that we maybe wouldn't even think of that would be easy for us to do that would mean so much to them. And one example is I talked to Anna Nakaris, and she is the founder of the Little Fireface Project. And you might be wondering, what's a little fireface? Well, that's her name for slow lorises. This is a nocturnal primate that lives in Asia, and that is unfortunately an animal that is trafficked a lot in the illegal wildlife trade for pets. You may have seen those YouTube videos of slow lorises being tickled. That's a video that went viral a few years ago. And unfortunately, what you see in that video is a very scared slow loris. And so that's one of the messages that we've really been talking about over the past few years is how to use social media for good and how to shut down those videos that are really bad. But one thing that she told me at the Zach conference is that she needs old cell phones. She needs old cell phones because she's got a bunch of rangers working out in the rainforest in Asia, tracking these lorises at night, and all of a sudden they'll see something really cool, and they'll need to get video and they'll need to get pictures of it. And she gave me an example. A couple times lately, her researchers have seen lorises eat avocados. And you may not think that's a very big deal, but it's very rarely, if ever, been captured on film. And all of these data points go together to help inform our management practices to make sure that we're doing everything that we possibly can to save lorises in the wild. And so one thing that Blank Park Zoo is going to do is we're going to use our 500,000 people in our audience to ask people to send us their old cell phones. It seems like it should be pretty easy. And if we can get 10 or 20 over there to her in her work in Asia, it'll make a huge difference to us. So, Ryan, can you see how something little on our end can make a huge difference to them?
So what type of cell phones do they need? Is this something like an old smartphone, an old iPhone would work for them? Is that what what they're looking for?
That's exactly what they need. They don't care what model. It just needs to be working and it needs to have a good camera. And so they've got the resources to maintain these camera phones. But yeah, it needs to be probably a smartphone. And so I assume on our end, we'll kind of work on a campaign and teach folks how to scrub their phones of data and things like that to make sure everybody's comfortable. But what we're trying to do is to get maybe 10 or 20 cell phones over to that project.
Okay. So if you're thinking of right now that you have an extra old iPhone that you want to give us, go ahead and just email us at info@blankparkzoo.com, info@blankparkzoo.com. And we can follow up with you so that you can make that donation to us.
And if you want to learn more about that project, it's called Little Fireface, and her name is Anna Nakaris. She's a professor from Oxford.
It sounds fun.
Yeah. And slow lorises are amazing. They're venomous. They've got venom that they can inject from a bite. They're extremely...
And thus the term fireface, probably.
Yeah, yep, exactly. They're really hard to track, and they're just amazing animals, and seed dispersers in the forest are really, really essential part of the ecosystem. So another thing that we do at ZAC, besides hear stories from the field, hear about what the field researchers need for us, we want to get better as zoos and field projects on how to create behavior change. That's something that we always talk about here at the zoo, that we're trying to incite behavior change, something hopefully simple in everybody's everyday lives that they can do to help wildlife, because that's what it's all about. Humans are the causes of these environmental problems and these declining populations of wildlife. And so we can be the solutions as well. And so one of our trainings that we offered this ZAC conference was on behavior change. We welcomed a company called Impact by Design, and they've got some great resources on their website as well as a really fantastic Facebook page. And we invited Amiel Dewan to come and do a workshop on the science behind behavior change. And this is something that I think is very fascinating. I think that anybody who is passionate about wildlife and the environment, they see a problem, they put together a project or a campaign, and sometimes we're all a little guilty of throwing something up against the wall and seeing if it works. But there's real science behind what makes people do the things that they do. And just by learning about this, we can make these little tweaks to our programs and make them a lot more effective. And so I wanted just to kind of hit the high points about the science of behavior change, Ryan, and just kind of talk about some of the takeaways here. And so really, people, I think, given the right conditions and incentives, can really be encouraged to make behavior changes that can be sustained to help wildlife. So when you are creating a program or a campaign, you really need to look at the threat that's happening to wildlife, and then look at what kind of behavior change an individual or a community could do that would mitigate that threat. And so the example that was given to us during the workshop was an example with sea turtles. And I know that we don't have many sea turtles here in Iowa, but it has to do with trash and waterways. And that is something that we deal with here in Iowa and something that we can relate to. And so first, when you're creating a campaign, you need to identify what kind of threats you're trying to mitigate. So Ryan, can you think of what kind of threats would be happening to sea turtles?
Well, loss of habitat. So something along the beach or something like that, digging up the eggs or not allowing them to lay their eggs properly.
That's exactly right. And a lot of those ecotourism programs will not allow people to go out into the beach when the sea turtles are laying their eggs. And another thing related to that is light pollution. If you know, you've heard if they have a light at a busy restaurant along a beach where the sea turtles are trying to lay their eggs, and the sea turtles, instead of going back to the ocean, will go towards that light. That's one. Ingestion of plastic pollution is a big one for sea turtles. Yeah, habitat loss due to beach development, climate change, poaching, but also entanglement in fishing gear and fishing line. And this is something that's affecting sea turtles as well as pretty much every other animal that's living in the sea. And so they've done studies and they have determined that one of the major threats to sea turtles is entanglement in fishing line. And so when you're trying to work to help sea turtles, you want to make sure and see if you can figure out what the main threat is. And it seems like it is that It is that fishing line. And so then you need to just determine, you know, what exactly behavior changes folks can do to help decrease the, you know, the fishing line that's available to these sea turtles. And that would be the targeted behavior. And so what they came up with this with this case study is that folks need to have the opportunity to recycle discarded fishing line in recycle bins. And so there's the behavior that you want to do. Ryan, can you think of maybe any challenges that folks would have in discarding their fishing line in a responsible way when you're out fishing and you're using this gear?
Well, yeah, just a place on the boat to store it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And so what we need to do is kind of understand what these fishermen are doing and the anglers, what they're doing, what they're fishing, understand their practices. And all of this can be done by surveys. What we do here at Blank Park Zoo is whenever we want to learn about a certain demographic or a certain behavior, then we'll find a spokesperson, someone who's really involved in that demographic and ask them these questions.
One thing I'd like to bring up is, for the most part, we don't want to discourage fishing, right? We want fishing to be done responsibly, and we understand that people do fishing for their livelihoods. And so we don't want to take away from that. And we just want to, if you can do something small that also helps the wildlife, here's the behavior, here's the thing that you can do to help wildlife. Isn't that right?
That's right, Ryan. And responsible use of our natural resources is about as conservation as you can get. And that is where the conservation ethics started in the United States and all around the world, is by using our resources and wanting to keep those resources healthy for future generations. And so, yes, sustainable fishing is encouraged in Iowa and abroad. And so we need to look at this behavior and figure out what barriers these anglers are facing to recycling or discarding their line responsibly. And basically what they found out is that anglers weren't aware that there was a problem and didn't have a place to recycle their filament line. And so it all boils down, Ryan, to decreasing the barriers and increasing the benefits. And this seems really obvious, but until you actually really delve deeper into a problem, and kind of just like you would do maybe when you're trying to figure out a solution to a problem at home with your family, write that list of pros and write that list of cons. And so barriers to recycling, they found out there's no place to put that line. There's no recycle bin. Sometimes the line gets caught in the rocks and will snap off their fishing pole. And so it's very difficult to retrieve. And folks most of the time don't realize that this fishing line can't even be recycled. And so some benefits of discarding the fishing line in a responsible way: it keeps animals safe. It helps to preserve the resource that they're using by being anglers. It's better for the environment. And this line can be reused. And so it's something that where they can save money too and reuse the line. And so after you know all of these data points, you just got to really design your communication strategy and learn what's important to your audience, what's important to these anglers, and make the benefits greater than the challenges.
So what are did they tell you some of the things that fishing line can be recycled into?
It can be recycled into really all kinds of different plastic products. And so it's kind of a general type of plastic. But basically, when you're designing this campaign, then you have all of these data points and you can more accurately design a campaign to incite behavior changes. And really, that was kind of a long explanation to get to the point where all they needed was recycle bins in prominent locations along the beach and a raising awareness campaign for anglers to know that the discarded fishing line, when it's just left in the ocean, can be harmful to sea turtles. And so it's just a really great case study for us all to, you know, really think about how we can create better campaigns.
All right.
And again, this is happening in Iowa fishing line too. And so it's a pretty neat story. Okay, so, you know, when I was thinking about this this podcast, radio show, and wanting to highlight a few things that I learned at the ZAC conference, one of the best speakers that we had was Dan Ash, and he is the leader of AZA, the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, and he used to be the leader of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and so we're really excited to have him at the helm of AZA and for him to bring his decades of experience to accredited zoos across the nation. And he talked about some statistics that I would like to share today. Of course, we've got 7.5 billion people on the Earth, and that's really putting pressure on our natural resources. But 93% of all animals on Earth are humans, pets, and domestic animals. 93% of all animals are pets, domestic animals, and humans. Had you ever heard anything like that before, Ryan? That kind of statistic?
That probably doesn't include insects, but yeah. Yeah, I guess if you think about it, that makes sense.
Yep. I'm not really sure if it includes insects or not, but that's pretty startling knowing that as a wildlife conservationist and as a conservation organization that we're working to save 7% of what's here on the ocean, here on Earth. And, you know, the World Wildlife Federation says that in the past 40 years, we've lost about 50% of all wildlife on Earth. And so basically, all the AZA-accredited zoos give about $260 million every year to save animals in the wild. And so that's a huge chunk of money, $216 million. And so if you just did the math over the next 5 years, that would equal about $1 billion to save animals in the wild. And what Dan Ash wants to do is he wants to find another $1 billion in match, working through corporate sponsors and making coalitions with other conservation organizations and groups that are working to save animals. So $2 billion in the next 5 years. And that's pretty exciting to know that we can be part of such a big effort. He also talked about what accredited zoos can do to increase their partnership with field researchers and what we can do to really be a driver behind change with helping to communicate both what's at stake in the wild and how everybody in their own lives can do something to help. I want to talk also about another speaker. His name was Steve Galster, and he works for an organization called Freeland. Now, Ryan, have you ever heard of a thing called cryptocurrency?
Well, yeah, that's like Bitcoin.
Yeah. So we've heard a little bit about Bitcoin in the news, and I know that the value of Bitcoin is...
It goes up and it goes down. It's very volatile right now.
It's volatile right now, yeah. And what Steve Galster talked about, he is an undercover investigator working to combat the illegal wildlife trade. And so the illegal wildlife trade is this very organized syndicate of individuals and organizations around the world making money off of endangered animals. And so one of the most obvious examples that comes to mind is the elephant ivory trade. Of course, rhino horns are worth more than their weight in gold. But we also got some lesser known animals like the pangolin, which is trafficked for its scales and for its meat. Slow lorises.
Explain what a pangolin is, because I've never heard of it before.
A pangolin is an animal. It's kind of a prehistoric looking animal. It almost looks like an anteater with scales. And
sort of an armadillo-ish.
Yeah, it lives in Asia. Yeah. And it's one of the most trafficked animals in the world. Now, unfortunately, you know, one of the biggest demand area for trafficking and wildlife trade is usually the Asian countries. And it just has to do with thousands and thousands of years of culture. Culture of giving an ivory carved trinket to the bride and groom at their wedding. Culture of eating shark fin soup at the wedding reception. And things like that, as we know in the United States and anywhere you live, takes a long time to change. And so they're making great strides.
Yeah. But let's be fair. Who's number two in the ivory trade?
Well, I think you know the answer. It's the United States.
Yeah.
So we've got some major skin in this game. And a lot of people, you know, want to point fingers. And what we need to do is take responsibility. Exactly right, Ryan, of what's happening in the U.S. right now. And that's another reason why I'm so excited that Dan Ash is the leader of AZA, because he's got a lot of experience with that. So Steve Galster gave a presentation about cryptocurrency and what that means in relation to wildlife conservation is in a lot of these Asian countries, and I think that he was talking about maybe Vietnam in particular, there's a new thing called Tiger Coin. And tigers are very respected in this area, and everybody's really excited about getting on board with helping to save tigers. They're one of the most critically endangered large cat or mammal in the whole world. And we've got Amur tigers here. There's only about 540 left in the world, that's for example. And they're one of the most trafficked animals as well. And so what a tiger coin is you can prove by filling out a form with an organization, I think you can do it online, that you have helped tiger conservation in some way. You've donated to a cause, you've held a fundraiser, you've written an article that was published, and in return, you get tiger coins. And tiger coins can only be redeemed at special places. Mm. And so you can see there's an exclusivity to this.
Yes.
And so it's really grown into these nightclubs having huge parties where only people with tiger coins can get in. And it costs maybe 5 tiger coins to get in. Then they can buy food and drink with the tiger coins, and they can trade them with their friends. And it's a huge presence on social media. And I thought that was just a fantastic, really cool example of modern technology helping us save animals in the wild.
Sounds like someone in marketing thought that up.
Yeah, yeah, I think so. And so, you know, I don't know if anybody in the United States has tiger coins yet, but perhaps Blank Park Zoo a couple years down the road will accept tiger coin to get in. I think it's a really neat, and what it really exemplifies is it's all hands on deck. We need to think outside the box. We need to have all generations on board, and it's going to take some creativity to solve these big problems. With just the last couple minutes that we have, Ryan, I wanted to close by just talking about what's called the one plan approach. And what the one plan approach is in relation to zoos is that zoos are an important piece of the wildlife conservation puzzle, but it's going to take all hands on deck to solve these global problems. And so it's going to take a coalition of field researchers, universities and academia, veterinarians, zoos, all kinds of different experts from all different fields working on these problems, cities, local governments, and that's called the one plan approach, where we all work together and bring our expertise to the table. And one example, that has to do with Blank Park Zoo is how important Tumani is and how important our baby lions are to the global population, that they are an insurance policy that's hedging against extinction, and that animals in human care and breeding in zoos is an important part of the puzzle. And
But we can't do it alone.
We can't do it alone, that we're one piece of the puzzle, but that accredited zoos and accredited sanctuaries play an important part of this story. And so I think as we move forward over the next decade, that the one plan approach is going to be something that is going to be common for people to hear. And I'm excited that Blank Park Zoo is a big part of that. And so that's all I have to say about the ZAC Conference. Go to ZACconference.com. They've also got a great Facebook page. And it's not just for zoo folks. The next conference is in 2020, Salt Lake City at the Hoggle Zoo. Thanks
okay,
so much,
and that's
Ryan.
Zac, ZACCconference.com.
That's right.
For that web address. And then if you want to help us recycle cell phones to help out animals, get a hold of us at info@blankparkzoo.com. info@blankparkzoo.com. And while you're there, check out our website, blankparkzoo.com, and you can find out all about Blank Park Zoo, our conservation programs, our events, and all the fun you can have here at Blank Park Zoo. Well, that's all we have for you today. Make sure you tune in next time for Saving Animals with Blank Park Zoo.